made it Reed College anytime.
Okay, you thought I was talking about you. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for an outstanding presentation. It's very encouraging, and delighted to learn more about the efforts that Reed is making. And as someone who loves to go in the summer to Reed to see Chamber Music Northwest, I'll take my next opportunity to walk around and see more of the good work you're doing. Thank you, Dan, for your leadership on this and for the innovative collaboration that's demonstrated. Thanks for your presentation.
Aye. Thank you. Salzman.
Well, thanks, Reed College, and Caitlin and all the other people, the great people at the Bureau of Environmental Services who are passionate about improving our watersheds and making them more fish-friendly. I think nothing excites citizens more than seeing salmon and other fish in places where they haven't been seen in centuries. And so this is really, I think nothing excites and brings sort of the civic spirit and identity that I think all of us have with salmon more than this types of restoration work that we're doing here. And so I'm really pleased to support this. And once again, good work by everybody. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for this very interesting report and for this great project. Thank you very much for telling us about it and for your partnership at Reed. It's a great example of government and the community partnering together and getting things done in a cost-effective manner. So thank you very much for that. Aye.
Adams.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for your continued decade-long, years-long advocacy for these kinds of improvements to our city, of both the county and the city. And to this great team, public and private, nonprofit, academic, this is very Portland-like and just really fantastic. Thank you. Aye. All right, that gets us to regular agenda. And we have, can you please read the title for second reading, item number 637?
Improve land use regulations and procedures related to recreational fields as part of the Schools and Parks Conditional Use Code Refinement Project.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
Mayor and colleagues, you know by now, as Parks Commissioner, I have placed at the forefront of our agenda improving recreational opportunities for young and old alike. The reality is that Portland is not a leader in offering recreational opportunities, in part because our fields are used at such a level that it's difficult to maintain them to the standards that we expect, and because, frankly, our suburban friends have made substantial new investments in synthetic fields and other resources for young and old alike. But we have set a goal of substantially enhancing our existing system, which we think is important not only for recreational uses, but to promote a number of the other values which we care deeply about, health and wellness, healthy living, as well as the chance for people to come together and organize sport. As one of my predecessors, the great Charles Jordan, once said, there's more to fun and games. There's more to this than fun and games. And by that he meant that when we provide opportunities for young people to come together in some organized athletic activity, what we're really doing is building good citizens. We're teaching things like skills around teamwork and working together for a common purpose, and we are providing adult leadership and role models and accomplishing many of the important goals that we have. So I want to begin by thanking the team from Planning Bureau, as well as the Parks Bureau, for their hard work in getting us to this point. I'm going to support the proposal before us for a number of reasons. First, I believe that it is a balanced and common sense approach to how to deal with field changes going forward. It balances, in my judgment, the level of change or improvement with the appropriate level of review and neighborhood input. It addresses neighborhood concerns, as well as the need to provide opportunities for organized sports that provide the community with important health and social benefits that I've identified. It increases neighborhood notification of field changes or improvements over the current code. It formalizes a good neighbor agreement process and establishes a formal good neighbor agreement policy to follow. None currently exists in the code. It increases the setbacks for bleachers and accessory structures. Bleachers go from 10 feet to 30 feet. Accessory structures go from 10 feet to 15 feet. And here's what's really important. It does not do away with the land use review process. Conditional uses are still required for the more extensive proposals, and that includes things like field lighting, amplified sound, new fields at sites that don't have an existing active use, larger concession buildings, and seating areas. And I want to just share with my colleagues that those are the areas of concern that I've heard the most from citizens throughout our community. And those are the substantial increases which therefore have an impact on people who come and use and the surrounding neighborhood. And this proposal does not do away with land use processes in those instances. This proposal is also the culmination of an extensive and comprehensive public review process, including over a dozen opportunities for citizens to provide input, no fewer than 7 community meetings, and contacts with over 1,000 citizens who had concerns or points of view. And while I do not believe that it is our job to always defer to the recommendation from a body that's making a recommendation to us, I nonetheless do think it is important to note that the changes that are proposed before us come with the unanimous recommendation of the citizen committee that we've put in place at the Planning Bureau to make these kinds of recommendations, excuse me, on land use matters. We are, of course, free to agree or disagree with their recommendations. But when they come to us with a unanimous recommendation, I believe we need to engage them seriously. Again, I want to thank the folks at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I was stumbling over that because I keep forgetting to put sustainability into the new title. I apologize. And I also want to acknowledge the tremendous work of Brett Horner from Parks. In the year and a quarter that I've been the Parks Commissioner, I've begun to get to know many of the 400, 500 so employees we have in our Bureau, and we have so many talented people that are asked in the current environment to do more with less. And Brett is one of our shining stars who guides so much of our planning work. And I'm just grateful for his wise counsel and his hard work. I believe this is a common sense proposal which allows us to move forward but also maintain an appropriate level of community consultation. And therefore, I'm going to vote aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to staff from Planning and Parks for good work on the project. Thank you for citizens who've been extremely involved and for the Planning Commission who put in lots of time to consider this, the bigger project. Thank you to Commissioner Fish and your office for discussing the issues with my staff and for being able to debate them in an objective and civil manner. I greatly appreciate that. And thank you to Commissioner Salzman for allowing me the opportunity to debate the pros and cons of the code changes by seconding my motion last week. As stated last week, I believe we need more time to process and speak to the various neighborhood groups about these proposed changes. This has not been given the attention. This part of the project has not been given the attention that it deserves from neighborhood associations. I'm very concerned about Park's assignment of neighborhood associations as gatekeepers without having discussed this with me or with the neighborhood associations. A short email exchange between the staff and the bureaus is no substitute for appropriate engagement. I believe that good neighbor agreements are a good means to have a dialogue about neighborhood concerns. We have certainly put in a lot of time in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to involving citizens in good neighbor agreements. They work very well to affect behavior. They do not work to provide infrastructure. They do not address the mandatory provision of infrastructure, such as parking, which is what is needed as a conditional use approval. They're not enforceable if they don't have a link to the code. And the one that we have with PGE Park is linked to the code as a condition of approval of the conditional use process, which is how it's supposed to work. The enforcement, the Planning Commission supported the good neighbor process only if it could be enforced. While the current commissioner, there is no question that the current commissioner has exactly the right intentions and will watch over this very carefully. But in the future and in the process, there is no guarantee that enforcement will occur, especially if the problem pertains to uses that don't need a field use permit. The whole point of a conditional use process is you're looking at the provision of the structure or whatever on the ground, figuring out what else is needed in order to make that work for any particular use. Having the enforcement in the good neighbor agreement in the zoning code would make enforcement possible as linked with a conditional use process. I understand and encourage the collaborative communication approach that is being proposed, but there is a greater need to provide for due process. Taking rights away from citizens that they are now afforded is not a good trade. Having staff decide whether or not a public meeting and good neighbor agreement should be established gives the staff person a high level of discretionary power, determined by whether or not they think the issues have been resolved to their satisfaction. I believe that having objective, impartial authority, such as the hearings officer, to make the decision allows citizens to be assured that impartial decisions can be made, and if the decisions are not considered to be impartial or correct, to be able to appeal the decision to a higher body. Both of these rights have been taken away and replaced with either no process at all in some instances or a process that depends on the discretionary decision-making of a park staff person. I hope that as the good neighbor agreement process moves forward with administrative rules, we will consider making it so that appeals could be directed to a hearings officer. I'm concerned about the cost. The time and staffing that will be required by a good neighbor agreement with park staff will not be funded, whereas some staff time at least is funded through a conditional use review with a permit. The timelines do not allow for neighborhood association comments and notice to neighborhoods in their newsletters. 10 days is not sufficient for neighbor associations or concerned neighbors to give notice about the motion to call for a good neighbor agreement and to hold the meeting. One of my main concerns that is about who can be involved. It should not be that the neighborhood associations are the only ones who can call for a public meeting and a good neighbor agreement. And as I said, if that was going to be assigned to the neighborhood associations, I would have wanted a thorough discussion at the coalition level and with my office. A significant number of the most affected adjacent residents should be able to call for the good neighbor agreement whether or not a neighborhood association supports their request. In the current process with a type 2 or 3 conditional use, any affected party has the right to participate even if the neighborhood association does not agree with them. The proposed process sets up neighborhood associations as gatekeeper decision makers where individuals should have the right to due process with elected officials and their staff. This is a problem independent of the lack of discussion about it. On spectator seating, I believe it does not address the overflow issues that will occur or the fact that in many cases no seating is required or provided and that providing adequate seating may require a conditional use process and thus is discouraged under the process. I understand the difficulty in counting spectators at every event. However, the issue of how many people are likely to attend affects the neighbors. And that's when you're providing the new facility, that's when you look at the parking and noise, concessions, bathroom issues, and put standards into the conditional use approval that require the applicant to make those improvements. What's being adopted today, there's no ability to do that. I do not believe additional recreational fields should be allowed without conditional use review, regardless of existing fields. Just as a side note, I was planning to filibuster this thing by reading the entire consent agenda word for word, but my voice doesn't let me do that. Excuse me. Additional recreational fields mean more fields, more people, more cars, more noise, and needs review. A concession time, quality, quantity, and time limits for use need to be stipulated in the code. Excuse me. I understand, thank you, the good intentions behind these proposed changes. I appreciate Commissioner Fish and his points of view on this matter and his belief that this will work. And I appreciate sincerely that we can agree to disagree in a manner befitting this public body. However, creating new code should not be taken lightly. No matter how much public process has occurred, we should take the time to get it right. More process, actually, I believe, is needed to get this right when it reaches council. Because we had amendments introduced on the day of the hearing last week, which citizens had not had the time to look at and had not had the time to organize to be able to come and to testify about. Think about the amount of changes that went into the final North Reach River plan after discussions with stakeholders, citizens, and city staff. That process took months and in the end still needed more work when it came to council. There are many more examples of when we have taken the time to get things right. And I believe that more work should have been done on these code changes once it gets to council. I believe that land use reviews provide an enforceable and binding decision, which is why I would want certain elements of the Good Neighbor Agreement to be continued to be looked at through a land use process. The land use process does have some problems where the majority of those in agreement can be held hostage by the minority who are not. That's part of the way we do business in the state of Oregon, with set timelines and set appeal dates and set appeal bodies so that decisions can be made, thank you, in a timely manner. My staff is looking after me. In many cases, I believe that people will abide by the rules established by the Good Neighbor Agreement. However, I can't support giving people false hope that the Good Neighbor Agreement can achieve equivalent infrastructure and provisions of enforcement mechanisms as is currently the case in the conditional use process. For these reasons, I must oppose this ordinance. No.
Adams.
Well, I'm through the Portland Plan, we are one of the organizing principles of the Portland Plan that is very much in process is that every part of Portland should be a 20-minute complete neighborhood. And that includes access, nearby access to affordable and healthy food and services and products that people need and want. It's also intended by looking at that to also provide recreational parks and nearby outdoor opportunities for being active, staying healthy. That is important because as active and as lucky, as fortunate as we are to have the accolades of being the best place to walk and bike and things like that, by many measures, we still suffer from a higher obesity rate than we should. The national goal is 40% for a city, and I think we're over 50%. I think an opportunity to address that is to break down the bureaucratic wall that has existed between the various owners, various operators, various jurisdictions that manage open space, potential recreational space, not only within the city, but also not within city, not only within city government, but between the city and school districts and other open space providers. So I think that this approach does that. And I think it does that with the ambition of providing a level of ongoing decision-making, accountability, and accommodation that Commissioner Fritz so eloquently conveys in terms of her concerns. But and Commissioner Fritz has, as a neighborhood activist and as a member of the Planning Commission, has been at the losing end of not focused just on parks, but has been, as other residents around the city have been at the losing end of sort of bureaucracies that are not good neighbors, public government run space that are not necessarily good neighbors. And so I respect that. I'm voting for this, though, enthusiastically so, because I know that our Parks Commissioner, Commissioner Fish, has as high or higher ambitions in terms of not only breaking down that artificial, you know, bureaucratic barrier that exists to more effective provision of recreational opportunities in the city, but also doing it in a way that is of a highest and higher standard that we've ever seen in terms of being good partners with surrounding neighborhoods. So I believe it, the fact that he has committed himself to bringing this back for a look in 1 year, I think is appropriate. And I want to thank you, Commissioner Fish. This has been a problem in the community for decades, and you found a way forward that I think will actually improve the partnerships and improve access opportunities to recreation and do so in a way that actually is showing better partnership for government, maintaining and running government sort of recreational facilities. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for items number 638 and 639?
Authorize the Markham Hill Meter District Revenue Allocation Plan, which includes a parking meter rate increase.
Oh, I apologize. I've been asked, okay, so I'm going to do the 4/5 because I have to go at noon. Yeah, so this is a problem because I have to do this noon item. But I move to suspend the rules. Unless there are objections, I move to suspend the rules to consider a 4/5 agenda item, which would be titled numbered 640-1. It is to grant a revocable permit to the St. John's Bazaar Parade. It's part of the parade functions to close North Philadelphia Avenue between North Lombard and North Ivanhoe from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on May 8th?
8th.
Okay, do you want to read the title?
Thanks. Grant revocable permit to St. John's Bazaar to close North Philadelphia Avenue between North Lombard Street and North Ivanhoe Street from 8 a.m. until 7 p.m. on May 8, 2010.
Through an oversight of the organizers, they forgot to submit this, so we need to do it, or there will be grumpy people in North Portland.
Mayor, is this rather unconventional application that you're presenting to us in any way linked to Commissioner Fritz marching in the St. John's Parade and facilitating that?
Well, I have to march as well, and I don't want to be the recipient of unhappy parade goers. Is there anything else I have to do, Ben? Okay.
Oh, how about the two polled items we'll have to take?
We're just doing this item first. Anyone wish to testify on what is now 264-1? Can you please call the vote on 264-1, the 4/5?
Fish.
I'm not only enthusiastically support this ordinance, but I look forward to marching in the parade. Aye.
Salzman?
I look forward to being there Saturday. Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
See you at the St. John's Parade. Aye. There are two quick items that were pulled.
And if I'm intending to vote for them, if you want to vote for them, then I can make my comments later. That would be okay with me.
Can you please read one item that was pulled, 625?
Approve application for loan.
Sorry, wrong item.
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct,
go ahead.
Mayor. 625, approve application for loan from the Oregon Transportation Infrastructure Bank for the North Portland Willamette Greenway Trail Planning Study.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
Mayor and colleagues, this matter has to do with some bridge financing to get us to a point where we will actually receive a grant. And so this authorizes some bridge financing in anticipation of a grant. It is a relatively uncontroversial matter, but I will say that my friend Commissioner Fritz directly and then through our respective chiefs of staff has raised an issue of whether, assuming we're successful in getting these funds, whether we would be amenable to using existing capacity within the city to do the planning process, and that could include folks at the Bureau of Development Services or elsewhere. And my answer to that is, of course. So this does not, in supporting item 625, we are not addressing the question of who does the work. We're simply lining up the funding. And I think the suggestion that my colleague has made for us to consider using existing capacity rather than contracting with some third party makes sense. And we've committed to explore that with her. Aye.
You got to be fast.
Salzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, and kudos especially to the citizens and staff who've been involved in this. I have some detailed questions about the mechanism for applying for this loan and the funding for it, which I can follow up with your office afterwards. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. The next one is 629.
629, authorize application to Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board for a grant in the amount of $1.5 million for land acquisition in the Willamette watershed.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Well, this is a very potentially major acquisition of open space for the Portland area. And I think Commissioner Fritz's questions related to identifying the appropriate operating and maintenance costs. We have done that at this point, although it is a preliminary estimate. But this is, if we get this grant from Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, Parks and BES could be involved with a major, major open space and the Trust for Public Lands acquisition in Portland. Aye.
Ritz? I think this is a wonderful application. It would be terrific if we were able to purchase this property. I pulled it to so that just to highlight for the council that I'd like us to have a discussion at a future date on how we fund ongoing operations and maintenance and who and what funds operations and maintenance. This includes $255,000 in ongoing operations and maintenance, and I think it would behoove us after the budget process is done to be looking into which entities fund these ongoing costs and why. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 640?
Amend the Portland Enterprise Zone policy and procedures for distributing community contribution funds.
Heath Wachowski.
And Sierra Gardner.
Hello.
I have a question. We have a short PowerPoint. We can make it very short. Okay, so I'll give an abbreviated brief introduction, which today we will be amending the Enterprise Zone policy. Sierra can get into some details, but essentially what we're doing, the portions that we're amending are when a company gets a tax abatement, there'll be 15% of the value of the abatement flows into this fund that then flows to either workforce training or business development in the community. And what we're asking to do today is to basically codify an action taken by the PDC board last month, which says the community committee that determines where those resources go gets increased from 7 people to 11 people, bringing in more small business representation. The amount of money that's flowing to the business development fund, which is the one that's kind of like Awami and some micro enterprise community associations, their percentage of the community, their percentage of resources goes essentially from 30% to 40%. So they get a greater share of the resources that a company has to put into this contributions fund. And that's essentially the actions that you're taking today. But why don't we open up for questions? And Sierra is the smart person on this and knows all the details.
Questions from council? How many people do we have signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
All right, then please call the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Fritz.
I'm disappointed that we didn't get to see the PowerPoint. I hope you put it up online. I had looked into this as a citizen advocate, and if you go to amandafritz.com and look up Enterprise Zone, there's
I read it.
Yeah. Well, you've done a study. It's one of the best programs, I think, that we offer to promote business and jobs in a very sustainable and thoughtful way. So thank you for your work on this. Aye.
Adams.
Great work. Aye. All right. I have to leave, so I will leave it to the president to hear the next two items, which are not voted on today.
Mayor, I'm going to actually, I have an item I'm going to amend at the end on some budget matters, if you don't mind.
We're going to convene as a budget committee.
Yeah, we'll actually convene. And
don't worry about it, Mayor.
We're making some minor tweaks on BES, parks, and housing. Not to worry.
You forgot the ONI piece.
Yeah, ONI.
Thank you. Sue, could you please call item 638?
Authorize the Markham Hill Meter District Revenue Allocation Plan, which includes a parking meter rate increase.
Do you want to read the second, the other one, too?
You want to do, we can do both. That's
638. Nice and more.
I don't think so.
No, sorry.
Good morning. It's close to good afternoon. Glad you're here. Who'd like to lead off?
I'm looking for the notes that I had prepared for.
Take your time.
Thank you. Mayor. Commissioners, my name is Ruth Lane. I'm the program specialist at the Bureau of Transportation. I'm here to present the Markham Hill Meter District Revenue Allocation Committee's presentation. Thank you for allowing us to present today. I'll give you a bit of background to introduce the subject and then introduce the members of the Revenue Allocation Advisory Committee who are here to speak. We have a map. Sue, how do I make the map work?
There you are.
Oh, great. Thank you. Markham Hill is our smallest meter district of the three, with $210,000 current gross revenue per year. This meter district is adjacent to OHSU property and the Homestead Zone C neighborhood, incorporating a portion of Southwest Gibbs Street, which is going along the top next to Sam Jackson Park Road, then following the curve of U.S. Veterans Hospital Road down to the VA Hospital driveway, where it becomes Gaines Street, and then curving back to 9th Avenue again, plus the 6th Avenue Drive, the little tail at the bottom going down the back of the hill towards Bancroft Street. Thank you, Sue.
If you need your other slide, just page down.
Page down. There. There's the meter district boundaries. And then how do I turn it off?
Is that all you needed to show?
That's all I needed to show.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was the most economical PowerPoint I think we've ever had in this council.
Great. Following a project advisory committee's recommendation and a pilot, Portland City Council approved the permanent meter district in August 2004. The district is operating well, allowing short-term turnover as well as long-term parking in a heavily used paid parking environment. Through this ordinance, the RAC requests that council approve its plan, which includes a meter rate increase and allocation of half the net revenue to be set aside for use by the RAC beginning July 1, 2010. Current city parking meter district policy allows a majority of net revenues to be allocated for use on transportation-related projects in a new district. The RAC is composed of the two major stakeholders, OHSU and Homestead Neighborhood Association, plus recently a member of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. The RAC has created an agreement between the two major stakeholders and a plan to spend allocated funds on transportation-related projects. The current meter rate is $1.35 per hour. The RAC requests a meter rate increase of 25 cents to $1.60 per hour to be effective July 1, 2010. This would increase the RAC's share and ability to provide benefits as well as produce more revenue for the city. RAC members presented their plan to the PBOT Budget Advisory Committee last fall and received their approval to include the rate increase in the FY11 budget submittal. At that time, they also added a member from the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. The plan includes sidewalks for several streets in Homestead and a contribution to support OHSU's bicycle commuter program. The stakeholders reached out to their constituencies and will report on that. Council approving this ordinance will allow the RAC to move forward to implement their plan. Any further changes to the spending portion of the plan could be approved by the PBOT director. And now I'll turn this presentation over to Anton Vetterlein, Susan Egnor of Homestead, and Michelle Rhodes of OHSU, who have come to this agreement by working hard to balance diverse needs.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Anton Vetterlein with the Homestead Neighborhood Association, and I've been a member of this revenue allocation committee since we started working on it quite a while ago. As you may know, Markham Hill is a place of stark contrast. We have medical institutions built out to a downtown level of density and amenity, infrastructure amenity. But the adjacent multifamily residential area has such poor infrastructure as to look like an area recently annexed from the county. City data shows a very high percentage of walking commuters in the Homestead neighborhood. Some old census data I saw had 25%, which is pretty astounding. I haven't seen any recent census data, but I think that's mostly students and employees of OHSU and the VA Medical Center who choose to live and work nearby, perhaps because of the difficult driving and parking environment up there. The proposed sidewalks are on transit streets that TriMet buses run on throughout the day, all three of the streets. And the transportation system plans, pedestrian classification for these streets are city walkways. Yet they have no sidewalks, or they have sort of scattered sidewalks here and there, but not a continuous sidewalk system. And there's also, especially on 11th Street, there's a very uncontrolled parking environment where you've got cars, diagonal parking, head-in parking, parallel parking, driveway cuts. There's no curb or sidewalk, so it's just pretty uncontrolled, so that the pedestrians end up generally in the street. The streets, as Ruth mentioned, Gibbs Street is an extension of Sam Jackson Park Road, and then eventually becomes Markham Hill Road, and so that's the main artery on the north side there. And then Gaines Street is on the south side. There's a ravine in between, and that's kind of a continuation of VA Hospital Road. And then 11th Street connects the two. It's one of two streets that connect the north and the south ridges of Markham Hill. So they do all get a lot of traffic. We're looking at 4.5 block faces of sidewalk on 11th Street, 4 block faces on Gibbs Street, and just a half a block face on Gaines Street to complete a continuous sidewalk on both sides. City policy calls for these streets to have sidewalks. In the Markham Hill plan, there's the policy of the Markham Hill community, policy number 2, that says create a shared sense of place and community for the people who work and live on Markham Hill. And there's an associated objective that says reinforce a sense of physical integration of the residential and institutional areas through enhancements to the pedestrian network. There's also a transportation objective in the Markham Hill plan that says encourage implementation of the goals of the pedestrian circulation site development concept, which defines these streets as primary pedestrian connections. And then there's also several action items, notably one that says a transportation action item that says provide continuous pedestrian access via sidewalks along Southwest Gibbs, Southwest 11th, and Southwest Gaines. And PDOT and OHSU and the neighborhood and the property owners are all listed as implementers for that action item. Also, the Portland Aerial Tram final recommendations and report reiterated the need for sidewalks on these same streets. So we have policies that call for the sidewalks, but we've had no funding mechanism to build those sidewalks up until this point. And you also probably have learned over the years that building sidewalks is one of the big planning issues in Southwest Portland, but funding is always the sticking point. And with this plan, we have a fairly non-controversial way to fund them. And given that sidewalks are quite expensive, we will need every penny we can get a hold of in order to build out the needed sidewalks on these streets. I urge you to approve this revenue allocation plan and the rate increase as soon as possible so we can start accruing the revenue in this coming fiscal year. We've already lost around $300,000 of accumulated revenue from this meter district to other PDOT needs because, for reasons largely beyond the control of the neighborhood association, it's taken about 5 years to get this far. So we're eager to start accruing that money and put it to work.
Thank you very much. Before I recognize our third distinguished visitor, Sue, how many people signed up to testify on this?
We didn't have anyone sign up to testify other than the
So it looks like we're presents. On track to have a very positive outcome here. But, ma'am, please go ahead.
Commissioners, my name is Susan Agnor. I'm president of the Homestead Neighborhood Association. I have only been involved in this process for 4 years. It began a lot longer than, but a lot before my time. I am, however, very happy to be here at last to speak in support of the Council's adoption of our plan and the attendant meter rate increase. We conducted outreach regarding the meter rate increase as is required. We asked for feedback on the meter rate increase, parking rate increase, at our December and January Neighborhood Association meetings. We featured a description of the project and the need for feedback in our Southwest Neighborhood News item in January. We also asked for feedback from our neighborhood through our email list. We used a comment card with a 5-point scale for responses to two questions. First question, it is important to increase Markham Hill parking rates to help fund transportation projects that benefit the neighborhood. Second question, it is important to reduce commuter trips and foster alternative modes of travel on Markham Hill. We got 9 written responses. 8 averaged between agree and strongly agree to both questions. 1 respondent who didn't circle any of the numbers available stated, and I happen to know who it was, she supported the increase if the neighborhood association would have assurance that it would be actually able to use the funds for neighborhood projects as outlined. Written comments also supported the increase. I want to thank those from Homestead who have worked on this process over the years, beginning with the Project Advisory Committee and no doubt even before that. To acknowledge in particular Dr. Keith Claycomb, who has come here to witness what we see as the end of the beginning of a program that will make the area around OHSU a safer place to work for those who live, to walk, rather, for those who live and work up there. Dr. Claycomb, wave your hand, Keith.
Welcome, Dr. Claycomb. Thank you for joining us.
Is a former president of the Homestead Neighborhood Association, a former president of the our area coalition, Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc. He was in on the beginning and helped us through the push beginning last year to a final plan. It is good to have him here today. I also wish to acknowledge the constant support and help of Ruth Lane from the Bureau of Transportation, without whom I suspect we would still be waiting for what comes next. In conclusion, I ask that you support the plan and the meter rate increase so that we can get on with making our sidewalks on the Hill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your eloquent testimony. Ma'am?
Hi. Hello. My name is Michelle Rhodes. I'm with Oregon Health and Science University with transportation and parking. And I'm here to reaffirm OHSU's commitment to this project and to being a good neighbor with the Homestead Neighborhood Association, the city, and other partners in the area to minimize the impact of our constituents upon the neighborhoods and other folks involved with not only Markham Hill, because we're talking about that right now, but also the South Waterfront. And we also want to enhance transportation access to the Hill in the most sustainable ways possible. So with that in mind, in regards to this project, we did survey our employees and students, and the responses were split to two questions. The two questions we asked were, is it appropriate to increase the Markham Hill Meter District parking rates to help fund transportation projects that improve sidewalks in the area and enhance transportation access to Markham Hill? The second question was, is it important to reduce single occupancy car commute trips and to promote alternative modes of travel? We received 49 responses from our blog survey, and as I mentioned, it was pretty much evenly split, where about half the respondents supported or agreed in some form, either strongly or basic agreement, or agreed or strongly disagreed with both of those questions. So it was interesting for us to realize that it continues, our efforts must continue to educate our constituents on the most sustainable and best ways to get to Markham Hill, including the recommended path of travel if someone does choose to drive their car to minimize the impact to the neighbors. We also, it's not specifically mentioned in the testimony, but we did also solicit input from the VA hospital, and to this point have not received any comments back in favor or in disagreement on this plan. So we did make an outreach effort to the VA hospital as well, because they're also a partner there and a neighbor, and some of their staff do park in that area as well. So just so a quick mention that we, again, are going to continue our efforts to support transportation options to our employees and students. We subsidize bus passes. We have a bike incentive program, which for the coming year we'd like to use our share of the proceeds towards improving our bike incentive program and infrastructure. We also provide carpool permit reductions. We price our parking permits in a strategic way to help. It's one of those tools that we use to manage the vehicle traffic to Markham Hill. It's one of our strategies there. We also encourage walking, which is what I do to work every day. So I'm with you. I support the safety and pedestrians because that's my path of travel. And we also support the streetcar for our employees to be able to ride the streetcar. And as mentioned earlier by Anton, the tram as another means that we use to help minimize the impact to Markham Hill. So, again, I would encourage your support of this proposal. And I want to also thank Ruth for keeping us moving forward in getting to this moment at this day.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Any comments from my colleagues? Commissioner Salt?
Well, I'd like to say this is a first reading. All right, so we'll be voting next week. Correct. But I did want to just acknowledge Dr. Keith Claycomb for being here, and Anton Vetterlein for long-term participation. Susan, I guess you're just a relative piker in the scheme of things here.
I am indeed. I am in awe of my
Because Dr. Claycomb and Anton have certainly been fixtures on the Homestead Neighborhood Association. I just want to acknowledge and thank them for their leadership, and thank OHSU and Ruth for your good work here. I will be pleased to support this next week when we vote on it.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I have a question about the funding going to the bicycle part of OHSU's commuter program. Don't you currently provide that?
Mm-hmm. And we do.
So why would revenues from parking go to that program?
From this meter district revenue?
Yes.
It would actually help supplement it, I guess, more than anything, because the approximately $23,000 we're talking about right here is actually just a contribution to what our overall costs are. We're anticipating this calendar year of expending about $170,000 in incentives to people. We have about 1,200 people who are participating in that bicycle program. So it's a really huge commitment in many ways for OHSU. And so this $23,000 will help towards that, but again, it's not only for the bike incentive program, but also to improve the transportation access in general, including bike infrastructure, parking, and such. And the way we like to look at it is, if the more people we can encourage to use these alternative modes of travel to get to Markham Hill, that actually gives the people who park more opportunity to find parking spaces. Because there are some people who just truly, for their own situation, maybe cannot use alternative modes of transportation. And so it's kind of an interesting twist, but yes, parking actually helps alternative transportation and vice versa.
I do understand that. I'm wondering why public money should be supplementing what OHSU is required to do.
Well, I think in the plan, we're actually supporting this because it's good for the whole. And it's also to support the Markham Hill plan, which the city and the OHSU have partnered on to reduce that reliance and impact on the neighborhood.
Thank you. And then I have a question for Susan. Supposing the neighbors on the streets that are designated for local improvement districts decide not to form them?
It's a very good question, Commissioner Fritz. And it is a question that we will answer. It's a bridge we will cross when we come to it.
Okay.
We thought about trying to do what ifs, and it's not, we can't do it. We're holding a meeting on the 7th of June with the property owners on the affected streets. Bureau of Transportation's expert in LIDs will be addressing that meeting and talking to we'll get an idea of what the response will be. We know that when we started this process 5 years ago, the major property owners involved were in favor of having doing the process. Unfortunately, one of those persons has died, and those properties have been sold, and that family is no longer the player it was. And in another instance, the individual owns fewer properties, or he and his family, I guess, own fewer properties than they once did. So we don't know what the current set of property owners, how they'll respond to this at all.
And I'm wondering if consideration was given to sidewalks on Sam Jackson Park Road.
Anton?
Below OHSU.
I was thinking particularly above OHSU, the stretch from the bank down to the emergency room.
Yeah. We did. We thought that might develop sooner than some of the other properties, so we were hoping that that would be done.
Get done with development. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's that.
Yeah, I know, but you have to cross over and cross back again. Thank you very much. And I want to thank Susan Egnor and Anton Vetterlein for your service to the Neighborhood Association, also Rich Davidson and Dr. Claycomb. Thank you so much for being here and for all your free work over the years on this.
Let me also just, as the, I guess I'm the president in the mayor's absence, let me thank our distinguished guests from the Neighborhood Association. Homestead, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy days to be here. We also very much appreciated the city when citizens come and testify and compliment city staff. So thank you for your kind words.
Well deserved.
Our frontline city staff do hard work, and they actually, frankly, don't often get the recognition that they deserve. So we really appreciate you doing that. And to our friends from OHSU, I currently get my health care actually through my wife. I opted out of the city because she's a public employee covered under another plan. And so I'm now getting my health care from OHSU. And I get my my basic coverage by going down to South Waterfront and to the to your building, and that has easy parking because it's underground. And but both my son and I have had substantial eye problems, so we go up to Casey, the Casey Eye Clinic. In fact, I never tire of just telling the story that shortly after his birth, and he's now six, he was diagnosed with strabismus and a very very serious case, and in just plain English, his eyes did not focus, and his eyes went all over the place. And, you know, at its most extreme, it has the potential of getting in the way of cognitive development because you can't have monocular vision. And some very talented pediatric doctors at Casey who specialize actually in strabismus, and we did some research, and it turned out they're the national leaders. And my son at age 3 months was operated on. Substantial surgery, and he now has not only eyes that are perfectly aligned, but he has perfect vision, and he's doing beautifully in public school as a kindergartner. So kudos to OHSU. And for the, and since you mentioned the tram and the trolley, I'd be remiss if I didn't put a plug in for my friend Don Bach and tell people that there's other ways they can commute, and that's also the 4T.
That's
the
true.
The 4T stands for trail, tram, trolley, and train. The MAX, the trolley, and it is an extraordinary hike when you start at the zoo, take the trail, then bring the tram down, take the streetcar to the MAX. So it's another way people can get there without using their cars. Thank you all. Well, this will go to a second reading next week. Yes. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sue, could you please read Council Item 639?
Accept bid of Parker Northwest Paving Company for the 2010 Local Improvement District's projects for $621,052.
Welcome, team, and the hour is late, so I'm hoping we can be as economical as possible. Who wants to kick off?
Sure, I will. Commissioner Christine Moody, Procurement Services. And just to keep this short, it's a procurement report recommending a contract award to the low bidder for the 2010 Local Improvement Districts. And I will just see if there's any questions from council.
Questions from council? Anyone, Sue, sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Thank you, team.
I just have one question. So do we bid LIDs in a package? Is that what this is?
Yes, Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. This is the third year that we've done it, and we've gotten really extraordinary bid results. This particular contract package includes a very small item of work, the Southeast 31st Avenue LID, which we've tried in the past to bid those as standalone jobs, and they're so small that contractors aren't really interested in bidding on them. So we were able to package this and another small non-LID project with the Northeast 109th Avenue LID. and consequently we came in significantly below budget. So the overall bid is 42.4% below the engineer's estimate. And I know I'm going to have some very happy property owners on Southeast 31st Avenue because it's residential LID. So it's a really nice way to bring the cost down, and it's simpler and easier for the contractor and brings in cost savings for the property owners, and obviously doesn't cost the city any more money. And Christine only has to come up here one time instead of three times. So,
thanks.
That was a really good question, Commissioner Salzman. So, and following up on that, have we determined that this is the size of the sweet spot so that we don't preclude smaller companies being able to bid on those smaller projects?
I'm sorry, Commissioner Fritz, could you repeat your question?
Well, I know when we've had humongous contracts going out, we've encouraged TriMet or whomever to break them down into smaller contracts because we want to make sure that everybody, the small companies, have an opportunity to bid on them as well. Are we now at this, do we think this is about the right size that even a small company could bid on this project?
It's interesting. We've gotten some firms, and maybe I should let Christine answer this question, but I go to the bid openings, and I've seen firms bidding on these contracts that I've never seen before. So I think what I'm seeing is two trends. One is some of the smaller firms bidding, but also some of like the freeway contractors that are really hard up for work, that they're bidding on it as well. My general sense is that having these contracts in a range of $1 million to $2 million is kind of a sweet spot in terms of bidding it. So, I mean, I think if we had a really large project, like we were building, say, a mile and a half or 2 miles, that's kind of an example where we would want to break it up. But I think this is in a range where just having a single contract going out to bid makes sense. And certainly there's opportunities when we do go to bid for subcontractors to get involved. So even though we don't have the smaller contractors involved on the prime effort, there's opportunities for them to be involved in the subprime effort. And, you know, it ultimately all comes down to what the project costs. So if I can put together more LIDs, then there's more contracting opportunities. And while the small contractors aren't bidding as primes, if they can at least get in the door as subprimes, then it's a win-win for everybody, the neighborhoods, the contractors, the property owners, and the subcontractors. So,
thank you.
Thank you both. This moves to a second reading. Thank you.
I believe we do vote on it. It's a report.
Oh, excuse me.
So it'll be just three to pass.
Do I have a motion to adopt the report?
Would so move.
Second.
So let's take it to a vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Fritz. Thank you for your good work. Aye.
That concludes our agenda. We're adjourned. Thank you. Yes, sir.
If I could share a personal anecdote with you. My father's a retired ophthalmologist at OHSU.
Really?
And
fabulous.
Kind of a positive note, but a sad note.
No, I
kind of had the same question. Did you catch him out the door?
No.
I just got in the mail my invoice for my seats, so I'll be re-upping shortly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Good job.
Put it on me.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
emergency things.
Well, but, and I think Amanda was actually a little concerned because I did see her